This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home, and it's warm today. It's warm. I'm going to roll the window up and blow hot air on myself here because I have not gotten my air conditioning fixed yet. It's kind of like the challenge of it now to hold out. This is mid-July. If I can hold out through July, hold out through August, I will have been the champion. So, we'll see. My wife is not actually very hip to this idea because, sometimes we take our car places, and so we just don't take my car places where we're going together because she does not enjoy sitting in a 100-degree car. I just feel like, you know, some people pay to go to the sauna, and I could just get the sauna all by myself here. I was talking to a coworker today, and she said, don't people die in cars when they have the windows rolled up and the sun's beating in? And I said, you know, I'm not really sure that anybody has died while they're driving down the road. And I said, you know, if I actually died while I was recording the podcast, I think that podcast would probably be the most listened to podcast I have ever done. Of course, it probably wouldn't get uploaded because I don't think anybody knows my passwords and things to get. Oh, man. So I told my coworker, well, I'd just go see Jesus then. But it's warm in the car today. But, you know, we're going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. Everything is puttering along. We're going to have friends back this weekend. The young missionary couple who've been staying with us are coming in for one more day on Friday night. And we're going to spend time together with them on Friday night just because it's a final see you goodbye, have a great life type of thing until we see you again. And then Lynette actually has some friends that are coming in for Saturday and Sunday night. So we're going to have people over all weekend. So this should be fun. It'll be interesting to see how much writing I can get done through all of this. Although I supposedly have a full day tomorrow that I can write. That is if something doesn't come up. But with that full day, I have been known on a good full Friday to put down 2,500 words. So that would certainly get me on my way to my 5,000 words for the week. It's interesting, at this point, I am putting the words down, but the emotional content is like skewed. It's just not quite, I know it's not right, but I'll go back and tweak that up once I actually know what's happening. So, because at this point, I've got all of the pieces, almost all of the pieces in play, but it's not right. It's just not right. And then I don't really know, you know, I'm up to like chapter 14, which means I've got approximately 10 chapters to go, which I'm going to need all that 10 chapters because I got a lot of complex pieces that are in play at this point, and I got to get everything satisfactorily wrapped up and get everyone's arcs going somewhere. Although some of the minor characters, I really don't care about their arcs, but I've probably got a half a dozen, maybe, major characters that I really need to have some resolution on their arcs, and then even after we hit the big dramatic scene, then I've got to get everybody back home and resolved and all that kind of stuff, so where there's a good happy ending on it. So there's a lot of writing to do. Wouldn't be surprised if this book goes a little long. but that's okay too. This is going to be very interesting to see how this works out. Anyway, so that's good. Had some very nice conversations with friends this week. Looking forward to next week. Be multiple days if everything goes like it's supposed to, of having conversations with friends next week. Some of my once a monthers are coming up next week, so that'll be good. I did see my buddy who advised me to write and ask about video streaming, and I did thank him for that input and let him know that my wife was very happy, and I was very happy that my wife is very happy, so he was glad to hear that my wife was very happy, although he was not able to get a setup with line of sight, unfortunately, so that means he's still going to be hobbled by working on 900 megahertz, although it will be unlimited. So, you know, when I was telling him the speeds I was getting down and up, he was just shaking his head. But that's okay. That's all right. So, anyways, obviously, this week, the verdict in the Trevor Martin the Trevor Martin Zimmerman case came down, and Zimmerman was found not guilty and was acquitted. It's very interesting to me. I've been watching the stories that have come out on this, watching the different viewpoints. Found a really interesting article in the Washington Post called "Verdict in George Zimmerman Trial Reveals Two Visions of Justice in America." It's a very interesting article, so I'll be talking about it in a little bit, but I am also fascinated to watch additional articles now that are coming out and the viewpoint of those articles. One in particular was an article that was saying, it was pointing out that the jurors on this trial had been sequestered, but they were allowed to see family, and everyone had to sign off on this agreement that said you would not discuss the case with them. They were allowed to go to the mall. They were fed, obviously, and given some nice amenities. I mean, they're sequestered. They said that the state spent something like $33,000 to keep these 22 people, I think. Did they have backups? I don't know. No. 11 people, maybe like plus one or two alternates for 22 weeks. 22 days. 22 days. 22 days. And the city spent $33,000. So basically, the city spent $3,000 per juror over the course of 22 days. So $3,000 per juror. And it was interesting because the article starts off with, "Jurors enjoyed steak dinners, pedicures, and trips to the mall." Okay, well, I can't recall ever seeing an article about another sequestered jury and what perks they got for being on a sequestered jury. I never. And I didn't necessarily think that what they had been given was that far out of scope. And especially if the state was giving them those things and the state lost the case, doesn't really seem like it helped the state any. to give them those things, which you would hope that it wouldn't. It would just be something that the state was saying, you know, you're stuck in this room and stuck listening to this case. Okay, we'll give you a few little niceties. It's just fascinating to me. I wasn't really sure what the point of that was supposed to be. But yet, someone... I mean, the article was popular enough, it made it up to the front page of Google News, which is kind of interesting. So anyways, two visions of justice in America. And I'll have to say, this isn't the first time. I'm going to crack the window a little bit because it is a little warm in here. This isn't the first time that I was made aware of the fact that there are two visions of justice in America. I think the first time I became aware of it was after the acquittal of O.J. Simpson. And there was such rejoicing in the street when the evidence seemed to indicate that, in fact, O.J. Simpson was guilty. Whether he was guilty or not, I don't know. But the evidence seems to indicate that he was guilty. And yet there was great rejoicing over the fact that he was acquitted. And it seemed like the great rejoicing was not that he was actually innocent, but then that he was that he got away with it. And at that point, people were talking about the two viewpoints of justice in America. And there were some claims that the reason people were happy that O.J. was acquitted was not because they thought he was innocent, but because people thought his acquittal was somewhat of a balancing of all the years of injustice that had gone on before, where African-American men had been hung, beaten, killed simply because they were suspected of raping or paying attention to white women. And it's really interesting and understandable that some would look at justice as payback, that, well, now we have someone who got away with it when there were so many others who didn't actually do anything and were blamed for it and killed for it anyways. And so, you know, I was aware, I could see, I'd watched the articles and seen the reaction to the O.J. Simpson trial. And so the article didn't come as much of a surprise to me, but it does illuminate a very interesting divide in America. Before we get to that, though, I would like to talk about the same thing I talked about when there was that sad, sad story years ago of the African-American Harvard professor who got into an altercation with a Caucasian white police officer who had been called to his house and the police officer didn't know who the African-American man was who was inside the house and probably suspected him of being a burglar. And the African-American man who was inside the house suspected that the police officer was racially profiling him. And that made him mad. And so a situation that could have been resolved if everyone had just stayed calm escalated to the point where this Harvard professor is getting arrested and hauled off to jail. Obviously, the Trevor Martin case Trayvon Martin, I guess it is much sadder than that, because this young man, who was apparently minding his own business, is dead. And that's terrible. And George Zimmerman, who also thought he was the good guy and trying to defend his neighborhood, now has to live with what he did for the rest of his life. And that's terrible. And it seems like there were several points along the way here where if either of these gentlemen had just calmed down and just not listened to their flesh and all the things their flesh was trying to convince them of, then none of this would have happened. It is probably true, might be true, let's put it that way, that George Zimmerman racially profiled this young man. That he saw he was a young black man wearing a hoodie, and obviously that's trouble, you know, according to racial profiling. It could also be true that he was just a young man in a hoodie, and that was enough to cause George Zimmerman to believe this young man was trouble. Because when he called in, if I have my stories correct, he did say that he was following someone who was up to no good. How he arrived at that conclusion sounds like he arrived at that conclusion simply based on the fact that this young man was wearing a hoodie, perhaps because he was black, but we don't know that for sure. So there was certainly this huge assumption that was manufactured by his flesh underneath that caused George Zimmerman to continue to follow Trayvon Martin and caused George Zimmerman to feel like he needed to get out of his car to confront the young man. But on Trayvon Martin's side, it is also reported that in a phone call he made, that he indicated to his friend that, I want to get the quote correct, that he told the friend that a creepy ass cracker was following him. Okay, well, that sounds a little bit like racial profiling to me, too. That the fact that someone's following me means this someone is after me, he's going to harm me, and if I don't bristle and, you know, put up my defenses and be the tough guy on the street, then that's going to come to no good. Exactly what happened on that street, only the two of them know. According to evidence presented at the trial, it does sound like Trayvon Martin, or at least the jury thought, let's put it that way, the jury thought that Trayvon Martin attacked George Zimmerman. If he did, then that's certainly a case where he was listening to his flesh, and his flesh led him down a path. And the really sad thing here is that both of these men listened to their flesh and followed what their flesh told them to do, and both of them were led down a path of destruction. This is one of the reasons that as I'm going on my little excursions Saturday morning and buying groceries, I try to keep my head up. I try to say hello to people. I try to be kind to people and get to know people. And in particular, I try to say hello and get to know people who are different than me, whatever that means. People who are women, people who are of other ethnicities. because I'm trying to build up a storehouse in myself where I remember the change in people. Where I initially see someone and they have one kind of expression on their face. And then when I say, "How are you today, sir?" or "How are you today, ma'am?" that expression changes instantly because I'm smiling and they smile back. And hopefully then as I see new faces that have expressions on them that I might not interpret as friendly, the thought comes to my mind, the reason they're not friendly is that you haven't said hello yet, not, "Oh, they must be dangerous." I mean, there was a moment in Walmart several weeks ago where there was it was Valentine's Day, I think, and I was looking at the Valentine's Day flowers, and these two young African-American gentlemen came up, and they asked me something about the flowers, and I, you know, told them I wasn't really sure about this, that, and the other, and they were kind of laughing, and I couldn't tell. I'm getting my mail. I couldn't tell whether they were laughing at me or if there was some kind of inside joke. I didn't know what was going on. But I tried to assume the best. I laughed along and joked with them a little bit. And then I took my little flowers and headed on my merry way. And if I had seen them again, I would have smiled and nodded. Because I'm trying to make a practice that even if someone is communicating with me in a way that I could misinterpret as aggressiveness, I'm just going to continue to assume that it's not aggressiveness and that it's not something to be afraid of until the first punch is thrown. So, or until, you know, someone lays a hand on me. Oops, sorry, bumped the recorder. And so my approach to this is going to be to continually assume the best until someone proves me wrong. So, two visions of justice in America. It's an interesting article. Woo, the garage is actually cool. Woo, we like this. So I'll just go over this quick because I'm already home. So the man who wrote the article, his name was Jesse Washington. He's written on these type of issues before. Says, "The acquittal of George Zimmerman in the killing of Trayvon Martin has revealed two starkly different visions of what Americans think justice should be. What is justice for a Martin, a 17-year-old black youth mourned by many as the victim who was minding his own business when he fell under misplaced suspicion? What is justice for Zimmerman, seen by many others as a good neighbor who made a fatal mistake?" And what this all comes down to is how you view the incident. Are you just going to look at the 2 minutes where there was a scuffle and Zimmerman shot Martin? Or are you going to factor in all the things that led up to that point? And some would contend that you can't even have a discussion about whether the letter of the law is fair, because the people who say, yes, justice was served, say that, well, you know, you can't consider anything else except the 2 minutes. What happened in those 2 minutes? That's what the law is about, and the law, that makes the law fair. Some people come back and say, well, the law isn't fair because the law is influenced by our culture, by bias and media depictions and all the other things that play into how judges make decisions, how police make decisions, how juries make decisions. And this man went on to say, if the jurors knew the sociological, cultural, and historical precedents for the specter of black male criminality and how these tropes are propagated in mass media, then perhaps they would have viewed Trayvon as the kid he was instead of the life-endangering black menace that justifies Zimmerman's homicide. And the author of the article was quoting people here on these. That idea boils down to a simple statement for Tina Williams, a high school guidance counselor from Philadelphia. Quote, society has it set that we should be scared of black men, period. And I would agree with that. There's plenty of images in the mass media that reinforce that. There's also plenty of images that are driven by young black men that reinforce that. I was thinking today about rap music and about the lyrics of rap music and the violence that there is. And these young men will say, well, I'm just reflecting my culture. I'm just reflecting this. I'm just reflecting that. But they are part now of the whole, what is it, zeitgeist, the whole cultural consciousness that is in fact feeding into this idea of the angry black man who is dangerous. And really, that's potentially what this all comes down to. There's a NPR journalist who raises a third opinion. Justice does not have to be a binary choice. It's possible, he says, that George Zimmerman could have racially profiled Trayvon. And it's also possible that he felt at that moment that his life was in danger. So what this really kind of comes down to is that we already know that all of us carry around these stereotypes in our minds. George Zimmerman carried around a whole set of stereotypes in his mind. Trayvon Martin carried around a whole set of stereotypes in his mind. And the flesh propagates these stereotypes. And the only way that it's possible for you to get away from those is to make a habit and a practice of moving in the spirit and recognizing when the flesh is trying to get you to think about things in a certain way. I will tell you, on Valentine's Day, when I was looking at flowers and these two young black men came up in Walmart and they asked me a question, obviously the first thing the flesh is going to tell me is, oh, be careful, careful, oh, careful, careful. But I also know that's the flesh, and I know that's a lie. And so the first thing I do is answer the question politely. And we chatted for a little bit, and I went on my merry way. And I honestly still don't know exactly what their motivations were, but I decided I was going to assume they were good. Now, if I had assumed they were bad and instead insulted them or treated them in a way that would cause their flesh to rile up, there is no telling what might have happened. Just like I'm not going to treat someone with disrespect who is white, tattooed, wearing a biker jacket, and he has a crew cut on. Because there's a whole bunch of stereotypes built up in me on that image as well. And my path out of that is not to just walk across the street and try not to pay any attention to them. You know, my path out of that is to respond with kindness and generosity and respect to everyone. And if an altercation comes about in spite of all that, you know, then we'll just leave all that into the hands of Jesus. But I'm not going to walk around constantly trying to decide who the next person is who's going to try to harm me. Because that kind of fear-based living, that will chew you up alive. And thankfully, I don't really live in a part of the country where I have to be concerned about that. I do recognize that other people live in other parts of the country where crime is much higher and where they have to be wary every moment. And I guess I can't really comment on that because I'm not in that situation. But I would like to think that this idea of treating people with kindness and respect and gentleness would work there as well too. Comes back to me, to Jesus, talking about sending the disciples out. And I think he used the expression, you know, out into the wolves, where people weren't going to like them. They weren't going to hope for their best. And Jesus' approach was, therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.